Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novi Williams, and you're listening to a special Labor Day edition of your favorite sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
Labor Day makes sense because you, and I love the fact that I get to peek at you and, you know, on the video here. People don't see video when we air this. It's just the audio. But there you are in your parents' basement. And I will say I'm envious, and I'm guessing this is the way your dad is wired because of what you've told me about him. But he's got the pegboards. Everything is hanging neatly in its spot. He is ready to do work. He can find his tool quickly because what do they say? As long as you have the proper tool, you know, the job is easy. Your dad's got the proper tools and they are unlike me where stuff is thrown in, you know, who knows, some garage, some tools, some basement. Your dad seems to have a nice, nice system set up.
I am in the Richard Williams sanctuary right now. And you're right. That is exactly how my father has wired everything exactly where it should be on the proper peg on the pegboard. And it's not a bad place to record.
Yeah, nice and quiet. Will Richard Williams be watching the NFL come Thursday night? Is he one of the throngs of the many, many millions that will be on couch, chicken wing in hand, ready to take in the NFL?
Almost definitely not. But as you said, there are millions and millions of people who will be every year. Scott, I feel like the NFL kickoff sneaks up on me. But as we record this right now, we're 3 days away from Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking on America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. And after what was obviously a tough 2020 for NFL teams financially, a lot of teams played with severely limited capacity. I would argue now that potentially a Delta variant is a variable here, but there are a lot of business tailwinds, Scott, moving in the right direction for the NFL right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got the biggest star in the game, with apologies to maybe a quarterback in Kansas City and some others, but you know, TB12, that guy's known all around the world, and to put him in prime time to start against the Cowboys. And we'll tease this. How about this, Evan? We do have our NFL valuations coming out later in the week. That'll hit Wednesday. And I don't think Kurt Bodenhausen, our resident genius, will be upset if I give wink nod to a certain team with a blue star on its helmet that perhaps maybe could be, don't know, foreshadow, end up in the number one position in terms of most valuable teams. And a lot of that is amazing. It's like local revenue. Yeah, but you and I know, and I still wonder if people really know how it works. Like the difference maker is how you take advantage of the local revenue because you keep a lot of that. A lot of that is not shared with the others. But the NFL, when you're talking about the collective, like you go way back to Wellington Mara and the Giants understanding that you got to play somebody. It's not good if the Giants make X more or think they are so much more important than Green Bay or anybody else. So everybody on the national level shares that evenly. And every year we get a peek of that with the Green Bay Packers and their disclosure. And you see just how good life is in the NFL. If you just had the national money, if you didn't sell a single t-shirt, ticket, hot dog, beer at your stadium, life is still pretty darn good as an NFL owner.
Yeah, we talked about this when we discussed the Packers' earnings and their revenue. The salary cap for players is well below what every team gets in that check from national revenue. So as you said, even before any team sells a single ticket, a single parking pass, a single piece of food, a single piece of merchandise locally, they're already over hitting what they need to pay their players and then some. And you're right, the Cowboys are kind of the perfect example, I would say, of what a modern day sports franchise business looks like. They're getting money from the league via media deals. They have a brand or relatively new stadium that's flashy and glitzy and allows them to maximize specialty seats and VIP and suites and boxes, etc. Then they are also in the real estate game. They have a building in Frisco. I don't know if you saw that great drone footage from a week ago.
Oh, you beat me to the drone footage. Yeah, you beat me.
I thought that drone, I mean, outside of it being really cool, shows off just how amazing that entire complex is, right? It is a practice facility. It is gyms. It is retail. There's a hotel. There's housing. I believe there's a hospital on site. They do. The esports team is there. It just shows off exactly how the Cowboys are so much more than just an NFL team that plays on Sundays. They're doing all the things that most sports teams are doing to maximize their revenue right now.
Entertainment platform businesses, right? Not just sports teams. And let me see if you're with me on this, by the way, because up until what I'm about to mention, the Cowboys drone video, and the amazing part is like flying in the doors and out of, like they do, you know, it's really cool. But up until that, like that was the best video of the week until the other one. You know which one I'm talking about? Did you see the second one?
You didn't?
All right, I'm going to send you to the Google and everybody else, the listeners, go Google Red Bull plane tunnel. And I believe in Istanbul, I believe it was in Istanbul. It's like the first time someone flew a plane through a tunnel.
Okay.
And it's terrifying, like a plane.
You know,
you already have it up.
Cool. Yeah.
Right. It's for me, just watching it, I'm terrified. Like, one more wrong, like 5 feet to the right, left, up, down. It's crash city.
But this is a amazing, man, right? Plane. Oh, it is a man plane. Yeah, you can see.
Yeah.
In there. Whoa,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yes, that's a cool video. Right.
Give me more of that.
No offense to the Dallas Cowboys and the drone, but that one I thought took the top. But we talked about it before, Evan. Like, if I'm an executive now and I'm looking for a job, a big time sports job, I don't want to go to a team that has its media all set up, its stadium and real estate all set up. That, to me, in the sports business world, that's the exciting stuff right now. What do I do with my brand? You know, the team's the centerpiece, but now how do I scale that business? Is maybe even with sort of an accelerator, what can I do in ticketing? What can I do in sports betting? Did you wonder how long we could go without saying sports betting, right?
Bingo.
So nobody, by the way, gonna make more money off the folks at home betting on their phones, wherever allowed, than the NFL. And they've jumped in with both feet finally.
Yeah, and we discussed that on the podcast earlier. I mean, we can rattle off when I said there were a bunch of tailwinds right now for the NFL. Sports betting is obviously a big one. Sports betting will add billions to league revenue probably this year, but certainly in the coming years. There's a long-term labor piece, Scott, which, as you know, is pretty critical in terms of attracting sponsors and attracting big media deals.
The TV deal, yep. Everything predicated on that labor piece.
Exactly. Yep. And then earlier this year, $115 billion of TV deals that are going to give teams that steady, reliable, guaranteed income for the next 11 years, I think, for those TV deals. It does seem like, you know, everybody was hurt by the pandemic. I would argue the NFL maybe a little less so than other leagues because they don't rely as heavily on the ticket sales side of their business. But provided that they are able to have relatively full or full audiences, full packed stadiums this fall, it certainly feels like the NFL is heading into, I think, a pretty big commercial year. One last thing I'll say, the college football kicked off in earnest this past weekend. The early ratings that I've seen are tremendously good. I can imagine that makes the NFL extremely happy as well. It certainly seems like there's appetite for football coming back right now. And if, you know, college football ratings are good, the NFL ratings are 4 or 5x usually. So
absolutely. And best college football video, forget about the results and the scores, whatever, you know, that every year I laugh in college football, it's always, well, this is the most important game of the year. And you get every week, the next week is the most important game of the year. Oh, wait, next week. It's always the most important game of the year. But you know what? They've sold people on that hook, line, and sinker, so they got to tune in. It's a great system. But best video, which, do you know where I'm headed here? College football, best video.
My gut says it's the Enter Sandman from Virginia Tech.
Enter Sandman, Va Tech. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was really nervous that just the bleachers were going to collapse. Like, everybody jumping up.
I believe it registered on the seismogram in Blacksburg. I think whatever like the earthquake monitor was, you could kind of see it on the waves on the graph, which is pretty cool.
Well, the audience was expanding. The interest was expanding. Now the Big 12 may be expanding as well.
I see what you did there.
Thank you. In this shakeup of college football, obviously the biggie, there's always the big chief dynamo or domino, and then everything else, you know, falls into place. We have Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC, which may just be more powerful than the NCAA at this point. We'll see what the fallout is, and we've discussed that, and we will continue to follow. But now the Big 12, absent this sort of deal that we have ACC, Pac-12, Big 10, whatever it may morph into, who knows? But the Big 12 was sitting there saying, like, we need, again, this always seems like we need to do something. But you tell me, Cincy, USF, BYU, Houston, like, is that enough heft for me to care about the Big 12? And I see from your face, you're like, yeah, I don't know.
It's a good question. So the Big 12 was in this kill or be killed mode right now. I mean, you nailed it. The SEC is getting stronger and will be the strongest conference. The other three Power 5 schools that aren't, or Power 5 conferences that aren't the Big 12, form their alliance. They want to work together. They want to vote together. It left an 8-team Big 12 that was losing its two biggest superstars. And what does that mean? Do they expand and get bigger, or do they get poached off and essentially disappear? It certainly seems like they're going the poaching route. They're going to try to expand. It sounds like it's moving fairly quickly. As you said, Central Florida, Cincinnati, BYU, Houston. These are probably four of the best college football programs that aren't currently in the Power Five. I mean, this is the calculus, right? These leagues share their money evenly, generally from media. So adding these four schools will definitely make the Big 12's media evaluations more valuable. The next TV deal will be better as this 12 team than it would be as the 8 team, but you're dividing that pool up by 12 teams now instead of 8. So is the incremental value of adding these four schools, does that better than offset the difference between dividing it by 8 and dividing it by 12? That's the calculus they have to think right now. And this is a survival mood. Look, this is not, if you had asked Bob Bowlsby, the Big 12 commissioner, 8 months ago, is this a good result for you, losing Texas and Oklahoma and adding these four schools? The answer is obviously no. But this is essentially what they are right now. They have to do something. And if adding the other four, kind of the next tier of good schools outside the Power Five, is the way they think that's going to happen, this certainly seems like that route.
Please allow me my self-deprecating 30 seconds of soliloquy here. If there are any Paul Feinbaum fans listening to this, like, they will firmly put face in palm, because if you tell me you rattle off these four schools, all right, like, I should probably know some of these players, because, well, why not? But when you cover the business of it all, you know, I'm not so concerned about who's playing quarterback, who's winning, where they're ranked. The two out of four schools, there's only two names that jump out at me right now looking at this, and that's David Klingler and Ty Detmer. All right. I'm not going back to Jim McMahon. All right, I get it. But David Klingler and Ty Detmer are the two that come to mind. So you can nobody accuses me of meandering out of my lane, Evan Novi Williams. I am in my lane covering the business of, and I'm not too worried about, I don't know who the quarterback at BYU, Houston, UCF, I have no idea.
Worth mentioning here, three of these schools, Cincinnati, UCF, and Houston, compete right now in the American Conference. As you know, Scott, Mike Oresko, the commissioner of the American, has spent the last 5 years essentially arguing that his conference should be in the Power Six. Five. Yeah, six. Exactly. Yep. They should be in that bubble. Part of that argument was the success that Houston, UCF, and Cincinnati are having in college football. The UCF folks will tell you they won a national championship 3 years ago when they went undefeated and weren't invited to the playoff. But this now puts the hot seat on the American. If the Big 12 is going to poach three of their highest profile, best football teams, now suddenly it puts them on the hot seat that was prior on the Big 12. So I don't think we've seen the end of this realignment. I imagine UCF loses the American loses these three schools, and suddenly they're looking elsewhere to see who they can potentially add. But it does certainly seem like the upheaval is going to continue, at least moving forward, for a few more months, or maybe even longer.
Speaking of upheaval, didn't UCLA win a big game? Like, I thought Pac-12 football was terrible. Yeah. Beat LSU. I mean, Larry Scott must be sitting there going, "What are you kidding me now?" Now UCLA is beating LSU in big time games. Like, George Klivikov is going, "What? This is great." You know what we should have done? We should have all our media. We should have kept, oh, wait a minute, we do. You know, all they need now is, like, USC to win some games, and back
UCLA beating LSU is very good. Top 15 Washington losing to Montana, very bad. I think you'd call this weekend a mixed bag if you were the Pac-12 right now. But yes, no question. The Pac-12's business is infinitely better when USC and UCLA are very good. And it looks like both those teams are at least better than they maybe have been in previous years. And that's great for George and great for the Pac-12.
All right. You went document digging last week and you found a little nugget in some filings out of Sport Radar, one of our favorite data companies, sports betting company, Goliath, that the NHL, as part of its deal, can take equity in the company that, by the way, is planning its IPO. How much are we talking about?
Yeah, so when you and I, we broke this story, was 12, 13 months ago, Scott? It was the previous summer that the NHL had awarded Sport Radar its long-term exclusive data contract. We had a feeling that equity was going to be involved. I don't think we fully nailed down the details. But as you said, Sport Radar is now going public.
We were also looking SPAC, right? So we were thinking Radar and SPAC with Todd Boehly and Horizon. Right. Yeah.
Now that it's not going SPAC, or now that they're at least being going serious about being public, they're sharing a lot of document and information with the SEC. A lot of those documents are slowly becoming public. So Brendan Coffey, our colleague, and I looked through the F1 earlier this week. We saw, the details of the NHL Sport Radar contract or equity agreement are written into the contract. And what we know right now is that it seems as though the NHL, through three different avenues, has the option of buying up to almost 2% of Sport Radar right now. The valuation on those options is around $6.5 billion. If you do the math there, I think it's a little under $100 million. The big question now for the NHL, because these are prices that are set in stone, if Radar IPOs and it IPOs at $10 billion, which certainly seems possible, that was around the valuation mm-hmm. that yep. they were talking with investors a couple months ago, suddenly that $90 million worth of equity almost doubles right off the bat for the NHL. So they're not the first league that would own equity in Sport Radar. The NFL does from a previous deal. But it shows you, this is what, and Fanatics, I think, has done this so very well as well. A lot of these companies that partner with leagues, one of the ways they kind of sweeten the pot is they're going to give equity. And if those companies turn into a Fanatics or a Sport Radar that are quadrupling, quintupling in value over the past 3 or 4 years, that's a massive windfall for the owners of those leagues.
Well, we have heard leagues and players, leagues and partners refer to themselves as, we are partners in this. This is really the only true way for that to happen. I understand there's like a rights fee. We'll pay you X. You can use our service. But when you've got skin in the game, and that's why we've heard Michelle Roberts try and figure out a way to get NBA players equity in teams. We know there are myriad problems, and I'm guessing NFL players would probably feel the same way when they see the valuation of these assets that skyrocket. Like, how are we real partners? We keep talking about partnerships, and then it's always like, well, we didn't make out so well in our labor talks, and they got a better deal. So this is one way to ensure that that sort of animosity doesn't happen. You're giving them real ownership in something, and both sides have reason to see it flourish. So I think we're just going to see more and more of it. And teams, by the way, with these companies, you want to do a deal, fine, give us equity. You know, we don't need a payment. We're seeing a lot in the tech space that just give us equity, because not only is it core to what business we have, but we think because of the popularity of sports, we can scale it outside of this initial use. So we're going to see more and more of that happening as well.
Yeah. And in areas, tech is a good example. Sports betting is another one where you just know that the business is growing because more and more states are legalizing it. There's more opportunity for the big players in the space. The NFL now has equity in Sport Radar and equity in in Genius Sports. Those are the two massive sports betting data providers right now. They're kind of the giants going head to head. It gives the NFL kind of options in both those companies as they continue to grow. It's a really nice way, as you said, Scott, for one, to kind of grow your business long term, and two, to help kind of create incentives for both groups to work together. The fact that the NHL and Sport Radar, or the NHL is an equity holder, is certainly going to make them, you know, have a bigger stake and a bigger interest in Sport Radar's growth as well. And that helps Sport Radar when it's dealing with its partner. So a lot of ways it kind of aligns the priorities long term.
Since you brought up Genius, we should say, as part of our Sportico Live valuations event, Genius is helping us as far as sponsoring that event. And Steve Bornstein, which recently joined the company as head of North America, former NFL executive, former ESPN executive. So if you have a Mount Rushmore, we've discussed Steve before. If you have a Mount Rushmore of TV, he's right there. And Kevin LaForce used to be in charge of the NFL's private equity group, 32 Capital, now at Redbird Capital. So we're going to have a nice conversation with Kevin and Steve about sports betting, about data, how do leagues and teams and these partners go about monetizing this? And we're still sort of, if we're in the baseball analogy, we're in the early part of the game, right? This is not the ninth inning of sports. This is going to fuel revenue growth for teams and leagues for years to come.
Absolutely. And let's change gears here, Scott. Speaking of sports media and Steve Bornstein, a new sports documentary starting to come in the works about a topic that you and I meant to talk about on the podcast last week. I don't believe we ever had a chance to. The back and forth and the multi-layer story of Bishop Sycamore, the quote unquote high school that is playing high school football right now. I don't even know where to begin with this story. I'd like to think that some of our listeners may have known or read a little bit about it, but I'll give kind of the nuts and bolts right here and we can dive into the interesting stuff. Bishop Sycamore was in a nationally televised game on the ESPN family of networks against IMG, which is one of the best high school football teams in the country. Bishop Sycamore got blown out in that game to the point that the ESPN announcers were almost kind of making fun of and questioning whether these two teams should have been on the field against each other at all. People on the outside, journalists started doing some digging. Turns out that Bishop Sycamore is not even a real high school right now. They had played a football game 2 days earlier in which they had also been blown out. The more details that come out about what Bishop Sycamore is, it seems like it is not even really a diploma mill, Scott. It is a group of people that were making promises to fairly good athletes about both their own pro careers and also a school that would be built in the future. They duped a marketing company, which in turn duped ESPN. Everything about this feels like the culmination of all the bad things about youth sports. You know this world very well from a hockey perspective. What are we supposed to take from the Bishop Sycamore saga and really what it says about both youth sports and also the way that we commercialize them?
I don't think we take away anything that we didn't already know. It's just sort of this big example. This was interesting because the game was on ESPN. And that gets the attention, of course. And the ESPN says, well, we outsource our high school work to that Paragon Sports, so we don't do the due diligence. We count on somebody else to do it. This school had like apparently played another game a couple of days earlier.
Yep.
So, yeah, you're just wondering, you know, who's trying to capitalize, who's being taken advantage of. But you said it right. Like, I see this all the time in the youth sports that Time Magazine had the cover of youth sports and whatever the billion-dollar industry is. Yeah, you see tournaments have relationships with hotels, and it's set up so that teams have to travel and spend an extra day in those hotels, and you know there's some money going both ways. The Little League World Series was just on. You know, now we're talking 12-year-olds, right? So we're putting 12-year-olds on TV, and yes, it'd be nice to think, oh, the purity of sport, they're 12, they're this and that, but there's big-time money changing hands here. So, I mean, if we're talking about airing events for 12-year-olds, who in the world can be surprised that top-level high school football would get this kind of treatment when everybody's seen Friday Night Lights, right? You know, Texas football stadiums are $50 million stadiums. So they're bond offerings to pay for these big facilities. So it's not a surprise at all. It's just an interesting story because ESPN was involved. How did we get here? And I'm happy that Kevin Hart, the funny man Kevin Hart and Rich Paul, LeBron's agent, they're going to make a docu-series out of this, and we'll see if we can get some of those questions answered. And another thing, so it just gets interesting because of what it is. Randolph Morris, former NBA player, went to Kentucky, and we wrote this story. Mike McCann, good job on this, that he had played basketball in China. He did his taxes on sort of like the H&R Block platform. He disclosed zero in foreign income, and the way Kentucky works is you have to, if you play in China, that's income from overseas. He declared zero. And guess what? He had a conversation. Yeah. He had a conversation with the IRS over FaceTime, and this was his decision. So long story short, I don't even know, like, we're just bringing this up because it's interesting. If you didn't see it, go check out the story. So he's in a wee bit of trouble. You know, he faces a bunch of charges because he did not declare this income. And because one of the entities was in Kansas, but he lives in Kentucky, it's like interstate fraud. It's just a mess. So I would say go check it out. It's all over $400,000 or $500,000 worth of taxes he would owe on the $13 million he was paid in China.
One of the things I find so interesting about this story is that you hear all these stories about professional athletes who go and play elsewhere in the world and get stiffed on their money. Hockey players playing in Russia, Samuel Eto'o, when he moved over to play in Russia, you hear it in soccer players in China all the time as well. You don't hear the other story, which is players who get paid the full amount when they go overseas and then don't declare it in the right ways here back in the US. So a lot of things in that story that I think you can learn from about the proper ways to do that business. But I think a really interesting angle that I've never really thought about at all, right? All these athletes that go and play overseas, kind of what they owe back in the US and how much that matters and what state they're in. Also, obviously a huge one.
I can just see him sitting down at his sort of, you know, kitchen counter and opening his laptop, hnrblock.com, and, you know, just putting it in. Like, you might want to get some professional advice when doing this sort of, you know, I work in one country, I live in another, maybe get a little bit of advice, maybe solicit some help. Anyway, he is Eben Novy Williams on the Twitter at Novy_Williams. I am Scott Soschnick on the Twitter at Soschnick. Our social media editor is Cora Veltman. She likes me to remind you that the show is at Sporticast, which is the hub of what will soon, emphasis on soon, be the Sportico Podcast Network.